Welcome to RHP Market Talk, episode number 36, produced by RHP Wealth Management, an independent financial services and investment advisory firm based in Houston, Texas. I'm Natalie Pica, Chief Experience Officer, joined today by our Chief Investment Officer, Glenn Royal. Thank you, Glenn, for joining me.
Glad to be here, Natalie. It's always good to see you.
It's always a fun conversation.
True. Never know where it's going to go.
Never know what we're going to get. So just letting our listeners in on behind the scenes, we so far we're known as the one hit wonder here because we get it, we basically do it one time and it's in the can and we're good to go. This is our first official podcast of 2024 and not officially out for the whole public just yet, but we started doing something called Market Minutes, and Glenn is sharing with our clients at the moment 2 to 3 minutes of a snapshot of what he's seeing in the markets and his thoughts. And it's something we're super excited about. Glenn, how do you feel about how those are going and how the rollout to the public's going to be?
You know, I think I have a face for radio. When I look at those things, I'm not really that crazy about, you know, being on camera. However, I think the format that gives us a chance every month to come out and say, hey, this is what currently is happening in the market. This is what it means. And what is the outlook for the rest of the month? That's the purpose of those. They're just a little short 2 minutes. Hey, this is what's going on.
And, you know, we started doing those with the thought we have a pretty good following at this point. Who are like, when's the next podcast dropping? When's the next podcast? So we thought we would kind of fill in the gaps with those Market Minutes. So be on the lookout, everybody. Those are going to be, they'll be posted to social media. For those of you that are on our email distribution list, you know, there's going to be links there. So if you're looking for more information and really just straight talk about the markets, that's going to be another resource.
And I would say, too, if you have a request for certain information, a topic that you want to know more about, something that's timely, shoot us an email. Let us know. We'll be happy to address it.
Yeah, that would be great. Maybe we'll actually put a whole podcast together that's just Q&A.
Could be.
That'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, first official podcast of 2024 and an election year.
Yay. Yay. My hair's going to be grayer by the end of this year. I'm sure.
Mine already is. most of our clients, most people seem to think that election year is bad news for the markets, but historically that's not necessarily true.
It's not. And you're starting to see a lot of charts and all these things coming out showing how strong this type of election year is. But I want to warn people about, you know, finding correlations.
Yeah.
And trying to find data that supports your hypothesis, you got to be really careful about that. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a chart that's being, you know, widely disseminated that, frankly, I'm a little suspicious about. It's true. We've always had a up year. But I think it's more predicated upon the economy and earnings more than it is about the politics.
And if you listen to our last podcast, and I encourage you to go back and listen to that last one, one of the things that we mentioned is that a lot of Wall Street missed their predictions. It was a pretty big miss on Wall Street for what was expected in 2023.
Yeah, there's some career changes going on because of that.
You're right.
I'm not going to name any names, but there's some movement going
on. So to your point, trying to create these correlations and look at all these things, you have to be careful, right? I think predictions are hard to make.
They are. And the pandemic has distorted a lot of the data. We're still dealing with the effects of it. That bust boom cycle was really extreme. And that's in the data. So watch that.
Okay.
So
just thinking about the election year as a whole and where we are, historically, it has been positive for markets. But we're in this place right now where inflation has come off the boil for sure. The Fed has reached its terminal rate, which we talked a lot about last year.
5.5%.
Right? Is there a pivot or not a pivot? And how does the Fed stay out of the crosshairs of an election year? And I mean, there's so much going on in that space.
They can't stay out of the crosshairs of an election year. It's just not going to happen because they control the cost of money, right? The supply of money, banking. They're going to be in the political crosshairs. So what we really need as investors, though, is the Fed to remain independent, because you want that independent voice affecting the monetary system free of political influence, right?
Right.
I'd like to say that's the case, but we're humans, and I'm sure it creeps in some, but by and by, I would say largely the Fed is a body of academics dedicated to their dual mandate of, you know, price control and full employment. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're always going to focus on at the end of the day, irrespective of who's in the White House or what party.
Right. And the danger, I mean, I know everyone's calling for a cut in rates, but in reality, if they cut too soon, we could be looking at another spike in inflation. And that really was the job to be done here.
It is. And the trend's in the right direction. I mean, we peaked, if we look at something, PCE, the Fed's preferred measure of inflation, the price consumption index, in June of 22, when inflation was at peak, this was 7.1%. It's now declined down to 2.6% on its way to that Fed's 2% target. So I'd say a lot of the big inflation fight is behind us, but we do have those fears of the 70s that are deeply embedded in this Fed psyche. They don't want to see potential for reigniting of inflation if they go too soon. So what you're seeing right now with interest rates, where are rates going to go? What's the bond market going to do? What's stocks probably going to do because of the cost of capital? All that's kind of in play. I think Powell was pretty clear that the first cuts will not happen in March. It's now possibly in May. The market's got about 1.25 points of cuts, you know, 5/4 point cuts between now and the end of the year. I don't know about that. So when I look at this economic cycle, what's a little bit confusing to me is, are we at the end of the cycle or are we at the beginning of the cycle? I can kind of make a case both ways. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm at the beginning of the cycle, when equity valuations are all-time high and yields are up a little bit, then I would think rates are going to stay higher for longer. The Fed's going to err a little bit, still on that caution of being a bit restrictive. Where the market's pricing in 1.25, I'm kind of more in a 0.75 to 1, a little bit less than that, maybe the first cut, because we had such strong data that's coming out on the economy right now. Well, it's a little, say, it's the quandary. We think mm-hmm. the economy is slowing down, but yet it continues to grow at a very strong, rapid rate. So that's going to keep the Fed, you know, keeping rates restrictive. And I, you know, what I focus most on, Natalie, as an investor in the bond market is real rates. What is the inflation adjusted rate that we're getting as an investor at the end of the day? And those real rates were negative for many years because of the 2008 financial crisis. They went positive. And frankly, I can look at the bond market and say, where was the bottom in this cycle? Where was the top in yields, the bottom in bond prices? That was last October. We hit 4.99% on the 10-year treasury. We'll call it 5%. Real rates got up to 2.5. So that was the peak. Since then, real rates have come down about 1.9. And why I focus on these real rates is it's a drag on the economy. It is a slowing friction in the economy, this higher cost of real capital. And that will eventually slow growth down. So the Fed is at this point of, I've got to worry about inflation, but I got to worry about growth at the same time. So they're going to focus on the real Fed funds rate. Mm-hmm. How much Fed funds rates are above inflation? That's high right now. I think they've got scope to lower it by 0.5 point pretty easy without doing any reigniting of inflation or any concerns, but just kind of send the market a message, the directional trend of rates. So we'll probably get a couple cuts over the course of the summer, and then maybe a pause if this economy is still going strong. We'll be watching labor for cues.
And I like the way you start talking about those real rates, because I know that even around here, clients started backing up the truck and loading up money markets, right? Because all of a sudden they were getting paid something and cash wasn't making zero anymore, right?
Huge increase.
Yeah, big, big difference. But going forward, what does that mean?
So as quick as the interest rates went up, they can come down just as quickly. And that poses something we call reinvestment risk. As a bond investor, I'm reinvesting my proceeds at maturity into lower yielding investments.
Right.
That was pretty much our whole trade for the last 30 years. You know, you buy bond to read because rates were coming down. Now that trade's turned, stopped, and it's gone up a little bit. I think that if you're in the money markets or in that shorter end of the yield curve where the Fed has direct control over it, you really need to pay attention to what the Fed's doing. So mm-hmm. if they start to cut rates, you'll see that come down quickly. One of the things we did as bond investors is there's that duration, right? That's that sensitivity measure, but it also mm-hmm. relates a little bit to the length of the bond portfolio.
Right.
As those real rates went higher, first at 1, then 1.5, then at 2, we started extending duration. We were scaling into it, right? Adding, capturing that real return for our investors. Where we are now is I still probably have, you know, over a third of the portfolio in shorter maturities. If I get this 10-year backing up as it is right now, just recently with some of this data, if it gets up to 4.25, 4.5, or about 4.10 right now, I would extend more duration. I'm not alone in that camp.
Right.
Other bond investors are going to do the same thing. This is your last opportunity to grab it. Because rates will settle back down. Maybe they come in a 3-handle range. The question is what is that neutral Fed funds rate? I mean, that's like the thing. That's that point of not too hot, not too cold, the Goldilocks Fed funds rate.
Mm-hmm.
Would seem to be around 2. Maybe that's coming up to 3, which makes the Fed kind of go to 3 rather than 2. So those are little things that at the margin we're all looking at as bond investors. But right now, I feel pretty good about the bond market. We're clipping income and north of 5% on our bond portfolios. Hadn't seen that in forever. But as we've talked about before, all we've done is this is normal, folks.
Right.
This is not abnormal. What was abnormal was
that.
The last 10 years.
Exactly.
Zero rates.
Right. We're back to normal, right? This is
so
normal.
So the economy's factoring that in and adjusting to it and businesses and all that. But these levels of rates aren't too high to be restrictive.
Right.
Overly restrictive.
So let's talk a little bit about the earnings, particularly in the tech space because, you know, honestly, when we look at those higher interest rates and making those corrections for the bond market being painful, right?
Right.
As interest rates going up, the values of the bonds coming down. However, I think we thought that there was going to be a bit more affect the Mag 7, as you just mentioned, and their earnings and money being more expensive and things like that. But we're still seeing some pretty good numbers.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I've seen that as a big debate in the market right now is the Mag 7. There's a lot of comparisons to either the Nifty 50 stocks in the 70s that were similar, the the dot-com stocks in the late 90s, 2000.
Mm-hmm.
There are similarities. You know, it was a collective group of stocks. It was 5 stocks that basically was the majority of the market that drove the majority of performance. So there's similarities. But I do want to point out that if I go back to the dot-com era and look at the 5 largest stocks, in 1999, they were up 59%. The broader market was up 21%. 495 stocks, less than 5, were up about 16. But the next year, these things really came down. What hurt the stocks in the early 2000 was not meeting revenue and earnings expectations, right? It's all about that. Right now, I have these companies growing revenue. If I look at the Mag 7, it's 30% of the S&P 500 today, resembles those Nifty 50 in the tech bubble group. They represent 10% of the total S&P 500 sales revenue, 5 companies.
Wow.
And it generates 19% of the profits.
Wow.
It's a very different setup. These are very, very profitable companies, and I would argue not terribly overvalued. If I go back to that earnings per share example of the 2000 stocks, that PE multiple is 43 times for those top 5. Today, it's about 27 to 30 times. It's a little bit more valuation. But look at the broader market. Where are we back then versus today? Back then, the broader market was 25 times earnings. Today, we're 19. So we're not as rich as we were back then when they try to make those comparisons. And the other is these companies are just tremendously profitable. The biggest risk, we talked about this before, is antitrust.
Yeah.
And that lays out over time. But feel pretty good. Tesla is kind of the oddball of the Mag 7 this year. Maybe just call it the Big 6 rather than Mag 7. But Tesla is, you know, it's a car company dealing with higher interest rates and expensive automobiles. And they're going to have to address it. And then, frankly, the bloom's off the EV. You're seeing a lot of cut in production, things of that nature.
Yeah.
The follow-through of buyer interest is just not there.
Right, right.
You know, range anxiety, you name it, whatever you want.
Yeah,
but people aren't
buying
EVs like they thought. So.
Right. So how does all of this kind of play into the deficit, the federal deficit? And again, I'm going to touch on how this kind of plays out in an election year as well. But we know that those higher interest rates – that affects the deficits as well.
It does.
And it's It can be painful.
So our budget deficit is about 6% of GDP. On the trajectory we are on, it'll grow through 100% of GDP in the next 10 years. That's clearly not sustainable. So it comes to the politically unpalatable action of, do I raise taxes and or do I cut spending or do a combination of both? Those are really hard political decisions, but that's what we're going to be having to deal with as this deficit gets out of hand. We saw a little bit of it last year, and there's two parts. There's those bond vigilantes, right? This term you hear out there. But what it is, it's guys like me that says, hey, the U.S. isn't a great credit risk that it used to be. It's got excessive deficits. You know, there's things going on, politics in this country. So I want more return for my risk that I'm taking investing in the U.S. It's kind of odd to say that, but that's really how it works. And so you can, as a result of this deficits and the politics required to get it under control, you could see interest rates stay higher and longer than that, maybe higher to a point where it could cause a recession. They get too restrictive. So that's something we certainly have to be watching for, you know, and we got to look for the political will to deal with it.
Well, and I'll circle back around to where we are in a normal interest rate environment. Having that higher interest rate, not being at zero, is giving the Fed more tools in their tool basket if things change. And, you know, we know we've got some geopolitical tensions going on right now, more than a few. If something were to happen, at least at where we are with this interest rate, we can scale back if we need to.
It's true. I mean, and that's part of why I think the Fed was so quick. You know, the rate of increase was the most accelerated we've seen in rate hikes since post-World War II. And I think a lot of that was, one, you know, the surprise of the extent of inflation, 9% on CPI at its top.
Yeah.
Out of control. But also, I think it was really an attempt by the Fed to regain that toolbox leverage of monetary policy.
Right.
You know, get away from the quantitative easing, all these experimental policies. And you're seeing them bring down their, you know, balance sheet. They've been rolling that off. It hasn't caused any problems yet. That's something else we're looking for. My main focus as an investor is the plumbing of the Federal Reserve banking system. I need to know that the banking system is operating. That's the lifeline, the blood of the economy is the banking system. And that the Fed is operating, overnight repos, investors are getting any liquidity is in the system, then we're in good shape. It's still holding in there. I don't see any issue. Bank reserves are $4 trillion, you know, because of all the new banking laws. So banks are stable. I don't see any issues with the plumbing of the Fed system right now. There are liquidity issues with stocks and trading for the big guys that we're all dealing with. But that's a kind of a different beast.
That's interesting you bring up banking because, I mean, 2023, that was what everyone was sure was fixing to happen. We were going to see another 2008 with the banking crisis that we got because of really in the tech space and really some banks that just didn't manage their balance sheet correctly.
Right. So commercial real estate's what you're talking about. And that's still with us. That's a huge problem. NYCB, New York Community Bank, is having problems. Their stocks just gotten cut in half in the last few days. They were forced to cut their dividend by half. They were one of the purchasers of SVB, Silicon Valley Bank's assets. They were one of the big acquirers. And what came with that was twofold. One is it put their assets above $100 billion. So that puts them into a whole new category of banking regulation. They're a big bank, too big to fail type. So they had to change some of their financials to increase their capital ratios. But there's a smoking gun, you know, we're all looking at that is this commercial real estate too. So that's still going to be an ongoing issue that community banks in particular are going to have to deal with. Makes us a little cautious in that space. I like the big banks though. They don't have that exposure.
Okay, that's great. So a little bit around some of the heightened tensions in the Middle East and what that does for us overall in the economy going forward. A very strong economy. You know, little disruption based on what's going on right now to the oil prices and energy and things like that. So just overall, how do you feel about geopolitical risk?
Yeah. It's out the wazoo. Yeah. We got it everywhere. I've never seen so much of it. Okay, like, what is it? 40% of the free world's having elections this year. We've never had that many in the history. So, I mean, so I have election geopolitical risk around the world. I have the Red Sea, which is the Suez Canal, one of the two major canals that we spoke about earlier. We also have the Panama Canal, which sidecars dealing with climate, you know, lack of rain, and they can't get enough ships through it because it's too dry.
Right.
maybe some good news coming this spring. Local weather forecaster, yeah, there's some right. ideas on that. But however, if I look back over the Suez Canal, which is the Red Sea, the Houthis and the attacks on the shipping and all that, all the major shipping companies are now taking the longer voyage around and avoiding that part. And that's mainly the European. If we think of the Panama Canal for the China to the, you know, east to the west, mm-hmm. this is basically Europe over in China's trade. They use that Suez Canal. That's a problem. It's inflationary for them, and it can cause issues. 2-week delay in transit just adds cost to goods.
So. Right.
Now, what we're not seeing, and what's a surprise to me, is the response in the price of oil. You know, the first thing, you know, that I can think of when I'm a little puzzled by it, frankly, mm-hmm. but it's the only thing I can think of is because we're not impacting a major oil-producing nation.
Yeah.
So Israel, no oil, nat gas, things of that nature. However, Iran is a different story. And so as this conflict continues and the risk for escalation increases because of things, you know, it's war, right?
Right.
Then you could see that impact on oil. So actually, one of the cheap spots of the market right now is energy. It's probably a pretty good, you know, worth taking a look at your portfolio at energy right now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So overall, we ended our last podcast kind of with a, hey, this is 2023. What do we think of 2024? Here we are now sitting, I can't even believe we're already in the second month of 2024. We're halfway through the first quarter. It's amazing to me how fast the years go by now. What, besides all the other things we just mentioned, are you thinking about
earnings.
For 24?
Earnings. It's all about earnings this year. We were flat last year in earnings growth. We're 0.3% S&P for earnings. We're looking for earnings to come in up 9% this year, almost 13% next year. If that doesn't materialize, then this market will get whacked. I mean, there's just no question about it. So that's kind of what I'm watching very, very closely. Margins, we're looking at margins. We've been always mm-hmm. mindful of margins. They're staying fairly steady. But if we don't meet these earnings targets, as we talked a little bit earlier about
right.
the MAX 7 and
yep.
earnings targets, if they don't meet those, that will be their biggest downgrade on those stocks. So
mm-hmm.
that's what we've got to watch. But right now, you know, I've got earnings growth expectations. I've got a Fed that's, you know, more towards cutting rates than they are raising rates.
Right.
And so I feel pretty good about this year. We had this term we were kind of bandying about called being uncomfortably long.
Yeah.
I think this is a year where you're just uncomfortably long and you're going to do okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate always these conversations, and I always look forward to the comments that we're going to get from our listeners because we love the feedback. So
definitely.
I'm just going to put it out there to our listeners again. If you have any questions or topics you'd like to hear us discuss, please let us know. And we just like to hear the feedback. We like to hear what you got to say about the things that we talk about here. So just thank you to the listeners. Please subscribe and leave us a review. You can also find us on LinkedIn and Facebook for additional information and content. If you have any questions or you want to discuss today's topics, please get in touch with us through our website at royalharborpartners.com. Whether you're beginning your financial journey now or have already taken steps toward your ultimate life goals, we're here to guide you. Experience the difference of working with a firm that empowers your life. A firm that focuses on what matters most, you. Thank you, Glenn.
Thanks, Natalie. Glad to be here. Look forward to seeing you again next time.
Royal Harbor Partners is a registered investment advisor, and the opinions expressed by Royal Harbor Partners on this show are their own. Registration of an investment advisor does not imply a certain level of skill or training. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.